KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim in for Michael Krasny. Lenora Chu is an American journalist and working in Shanghai. And a few years ago, she decided to enroll her three-year-old son in one of China's state-run public schools. Chinese students get some of the top marks in math and science in the world, and Chu says her son benefited. But she also noticed a strict emphasis on discipline and obedience in what she calls a teacher-knows-best classroom. Chu will join us to talk about where Chinese classrooms excel and where they fall short compared to the U.S. schools. Her new book is called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, A Chinese School, and A Global Race to Achieve. Join us after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim, in this week for Michael Krasny. Lenora Chu is an American journalist working in Shanghai, and a few years ago, she decided to enroll her three-year-old son in one of China's state-run public schools. Chinese students get some of the top marks in math and science in the world, and Chu says her son benefited from the rigorous teacher-knows-best classrooms. But she started noticing what she called troubling signs of obedience, and a classroom that focused more on obeying rules and less on independent thinking. She started to investigate the Chinese education system at all levels and discovered that there are both things to be admired and disturbed in their practices. And she's got a new book about all this. It's called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, A Chinese School, and A Global Race to Achieve. She joins us from the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York. Lenora Chu, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thanks for having me, Queena.
So let's just start. You and your husband, Rob Schmitz, he's a name that might be familiar to our listeners. He's the NPR's China correspondent. You all moved from Los Angeles to China with your young son, Rainey. And when it came time to enroll him in schools, a lot of expats enroll their kids in these international schools. But you decided to send him to this state-run Chinese public school. Why did you guys make that decision?
Well, first of all, it was just a couple of blocks down the street. And, you know, everyone talks about the Chinese for producing some of the world's best students. And, you know, we were harried, working parents. We had a lot going on. And we thought, why not get a little bit of that Chinese style discipline, you know, just a couple blocks away? And we wanted him to learn Mandarin. It was kind of a no-brainer.
So in the beginning, it was sort of convenience and it's right down the street. We want him to learn Mandarin. But as he started going through this education system, you started noticing that there's a lot more differences in the education he was getting in the Chinese schools. And one of the starkest differences in my mind was this unquestioned authority that teachers have in the classroom. I would say it's akin to maybe the way people might treat doctors or lawyers in the United States. Can you tell us that first encounter with that sort of attitude in the Chinese schools?
Sure. So my son was three when we put him in the school, and he hates eggs. He had very particular tastes. Now, the first week, he comes home, and he tells me my teacher forced me to eat eggs. She actually put eggs in his mouth four times, and he had no choice but to swallow. So I'm enraged, of course, and I march off to school, and I say, in America, you know, we incent our children to choose. We don't use methods of force. We talk about the benefits of decision A over decision B, and we trust them with the decision. And she says, does it work? And I had to admit that it doesn't. Later, she pulls me aside and says, don't ever question my authority in front of a child again. And I knew that I was in for much more than I bargained for.
And I want to hit one more before we sort of drill in a little. Another thing that you really noticed was this really constant measuring in the Chinese schools, and I would say maybe even in East Asian culture at large, being Asian, this Korean, this really resonated with me. I mean, it's everything from my kid got straight A's to how tall they are. You want to take it from there, all the things that you found that they measure in these schools.
So it's funny. If you ask a Chinese parent in Shanghai, you know, how's little Ming doing? How's Cindy doing? You know, you're as an American, you're expecting, oh, you know, he loves tennis. We go to museums on weekends, or he's playing soccer. The answer usually comes back something like this. Out of 47 students in his class, he's 9th in math, 8th in Chinese, and 27th in physics. It's just a constant measurement of worth based on numbers. And because the education system is so high stakes, it's essentially a race to advance from the time that you are born. Everyone is constantly thinking about how they rank relative to the group. And it's a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, and you're touching on something there, sort of the broader forces that are at work here that are not just cultural. And that is that it's a country with, like, I think 1.3 billion people. Is that correct?
That's right.
Resources are scarce, and education is a resource.
So we always forget when we think about China how large it is and also how far it's come in just a short period of time. So there's 200 million school children in this school system. And basically, they built it from scratch in 50 to 60 years, almost 100% illiteracy 60 years ago. Now they've completely reversed that trend and they've taken some shortcuts. So here are the numbers that we think about it. There's 18 million babies born in China every year. In America, it's only 4 million. Here's the problem in China. There's just not enough school spots for everybody. So you're looking at a gauntlet of entrance exams pretty much from the time you're 5 years old. And at that high school entrance exam, that's when it's really devastating. Out of the 18 million, you lose about 8 million right away. They just drop out of the system. So, you know, scores really drives behavior in China.
And I heard this interesting theory once, and I'm wondering if this is true in China. On the one hand, we Americans don't really like this scoring system, this focus on tests. On another hand, I'd heard in countries like India, they really started instituting these tests because there was so much nepotism and favoritism in the schools, depending on your rank in society and who your parents were, that in some ways tests were the most, I guess, egalitarian way of deciding who gets these resources of, you know, getting a slot at the university. Is that the same idea in China?
You're absolutely right. I mean, when you're, you know, education is used as a selection process for university, and when you have such a huge population, you really want to make it very clear who advances and who doesn't, especially in this society now. There's money now, especially in places like Shanghai and Beijing. You know, you talk to Chinese parents and they're usually talking about what kind of gifts they can give for their teachers. At Chinese New Year, there's a huge amount of money that changes hands. And if you move too far away from a test score, then you introduce human judgment, you know, essays, interviews, and all of these things can be traded for money. And so that's the problem that China faces. How much do you move away from the exam system? Do you invite corruption if you do so?
Right. And there is a tradition in China that might be foreign to us here in America of gifting to your teacher money. You mentioned coach bags, so, and coach wallets a lot as
right.
gifts.
So I hear all the parents around me in my son's classroom talking about, you know, is it Louis Vuitton? Is it Coach? Is it Prada? And, you know, it's funny because in Chinese society, you give gifts to people who are important to you in your life. But what's different about China and America is that someone who takes a gift from you in China, especially a Prada bag or something of high value, the giver expects something in return. So that teacher who takes something is on the hook for something. And what I started noticing in my son's Chinese classroom is that, you know, seating was arranged based on who had given what. You always, it's sort of on the hush hush, but you always find out through the grapevine, you know, whose parents gave money, whose parents gave gifts. And absolutely, there's a lot of gray money washing around in the education system.
And so there's an argument to be made in order to combat that. If kids just take tests and that's how we decide, then none of that influence will affect who gets a spot. But we are talking to Lenora Chu. She's an American journalist living in China. She enrolled her son in a state-run public school, and she has a new book out about that experience. It's called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, A Chinese School, and A Global Race to Achieve. If you want to ask Lenora any questions about the Chinese school system, or if you have any comments about the American school system and what it might learn or what it might teach the folks in China, you can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email us. You can email your questions at forum@kqed.org or post them at kqed.org/forum. So in your book, I thought it was really interesting. You go through these many examples of this competitive spirit. And as I was reading it, I was sort of getting a little exhausted and feeling your fatigue. One day you get to the school and your kid's learning the recorder. It's an instrument. And on the big bulletin board, it lists what everybody's strengths and weaknesses are. You want to pick up the story from there?
Yeah. So if you're a parent in China, you have to be very comfortable with public posted rankings. And it starts in kindergarten. So my son, he's not a great recorder player. The Chinese think of the recorder as sort of a bellwether of musical talent. And up there, you'll see, okay, number 27 doesn't follow rhythm, or number 21 doesn't cover the third hole accurately. And it's all out there for everybody to see. So obviously, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm worried about my son's self-esteem. And it's really a tough way to be a parent in China. But, you know, there's a positive to all of this. And, you know, the Chinese don't really talk about self-esteem. It doesn't really exist as much in the cultural lexicon there. And that's because when you see that on the paper, it says doesn't follow rhythm, you're expected as a family to sort of pull together and make sure your kid gets it. And that's the point of posting everything. You know, there's this connection between effort and achievement that in America, we're so uncomfortable with scores and rankings and academics because the studies show we're more likely to believe in innate talent and ability. And so we make that connection with self-esteem that the Chinese really don't.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when I was reading that, I was expecting you to be like, all right, I'm done with this. I'm pulling my kid out of school. But instead, you turn to your kid and say, we'll practice harder. So it's
we
sort of
tried. Right, exactly. That's the expected reaction. That's what the Chinese teacher wants you to do.
And that is interesting, this idea of the growth mindset, that in some part this competition is driven in China because they subscribe to this idea of growth mindset. That's a Western term. That's this idea that people can actually acquire talents. In America, we think that people are born with talent. So you might say, my kid isn't good in music. But in China, the idea is every kid can be good at music if they only try harder and practice harder.
That's right. And it is useful in academics. Obviously, what I was learning about the Chinese way is that anything can go overboard, right? Very easily. Respect for teacher, if she's someone who uses it to shame children, then obviously that goes overboard. But it's helpful when parents don't challenge them on every single little thing. You know, if Johnny comes home with a B or if little Ming comes home with a B, the Chinese parent is more likely to say, oh, he deserved it, and we're not going to go bug the teacher for an A. You know, so the Chinese teacher has respect. Obviously, it can go overboard, but the same with the scores and the rankings. You can definitely go overboard with it. So it was kind of an interesting, my book is really about what's the balance, mm-hmm. right? I saw so much that was extreme in China, but because I'm an American and I came through the American public school system, I began to reflect on what was happening back home in the U.S. And teachers, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And I was sort of also thinking, reading your book, you share a lot of experiences about your own educational upbringing. You were born in the U.S. and raised in Houston, but your parents are both immigrants. Was it from Taiwan or from China?
China via Taiwan.
Yes.
Yeah,
so they, and I felt like,
story.
Right. I felt like in your book, there were a lot of aha moments where as you're living your kid's experience, you were sort of like, oh, that's why my dad was like that. Can you
right.
tell us a little bit? It sounds like you had a tiger dad.
I did. I had a tiger dad. You know, I really wanted, I mean, here's a funny story from my childhood. I played piano from the time I was four. You know, I was practically studying for the SAT when I was, you know, still in diapers. But, you know, when I turned 12 or 13, I really wanted a pet. And this is not really part of the life equation for my parents. And so they made a deal with me. They said, if you win this piano competition, we'll buy you a gerbil. And of course, I practiced for months, you know, really hard. I looked down sometimes. I expected my fingers to be nubs from working so hard. But, you know, we moved toward the finish line. I get number two. I don't make it. I still remember exactly her name, the woman who won the girl who won this competition. But I didn't get my gerbil, you know. And so in that way, you're taught.
Well, you didn't get it because your folks were like, well, you didn't get number one. And that was the deal. And number two doesn't
exactly.
cut it.
number two doesn't cut it. There's no sort of self-esteem trophy. There's no trophy for, oh, you put in a good effort, you know. And that obviously that's not a way to live life. But the reason I wrote this book is more because I rebelled against my parents. I quit piano. I didn't want to go to Sunday language school. There were a lot of things I refused to do. But I did get into Stanford. I excelled in a lot of ways. And as a parent, when I'm looking at my own son, I really began thinking, what was it about my childhood, about the Chinese way, that I actually thought was valuable? And what did I want to try to replicate in my own family life?
We are speaking to Lenora Chu. She's an American journalist living in China. Her son, she enrolled her son in a state-run public school, and she has a new book out about that experience. It's called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, a Chinese School, and the Global Race to Achieve. We've opened up the phone lines for you to ask any questions to Lenora about the Chinese school system or, you know, any comments. And that phone number is 866-733-6786. And we got a call here, so let's go to Ben in Berkeley. Ben, welcome to Forum.
Oh, thanks. Good to be on here. I'm calling as a former teacher in South Korea, a very completely test-based society. There's a lot of pressure on the students, and it's well known that a lot of them, if they don't get into a top high school, and certainly if they don't get into a top university, will actually end their lives. And that's really kind of a horrible price to pay, in my opinion, for that extreme meritocracy. And I was wondering, probably not the elementary level, but as a greater society, how you felt about how that might affect Chinese students.
That's a great question. You know, every year around that national high school and national college entrance exam, there are news reports of student suicides. This is a real problem, especially in the upper grades, when you have such a massive population trying to advance educationally. And if you talk to most Chinese, you know, you do want, this is a problem, you want to pull your child out if you have the resources to do so before it starts getting too intense. You know, in my book, I follow those who really don't have choices are those in the countryside, also middle class Chinese in cities. And it's terrible for them because they have no choice. They're sort of trapped in the system. And that's why a lot of ways you see Chinese coming over to the U.S. because they want to escape the rigidity of this high stakes system. It absolutely is a problem. But, you know, I should say that in education policy circles, South Korea is known to be worse.
Worse than China.
China's working very hard on reforming their system. And I go into that in one chapter in my book. But they're looking at the U.S., Europe, and Australia to see what they can learn.
Yeah. And I was wondering if you could go into that a little bit more. It's not just the suicides, but there was this sort of very soul-searching, you said, because of various news incidents among students in the news, really high-achieving students doing some bad acts. And that's prompted the soul-searching. You want to talk about that a little bit and how it's affected the way they approach education?
Sure. It's funny. Shanghai, we benefit being in Shanghai because it's a pilot project. It's basically where change starts. And there's nothing they are not trying. They're trying to give students two chances at that college entrance exam instead of one. You know, the idea is if you get a second shot, the first time is less of a nail biter. You know, they're banning, you know, homework in kindergarten. They're saying you can't teach math anymore for 5-year-olds. They're trying everything from preschool all the way through university. The problem is, with such a large population, if you're still using exams to advance children, you have this sort of conflict. I call it this sort of double straitjacket of the exam system plus this top-down teacher culture. And at some point, that is going to come to a head.
So in a way, you might be able to change the attitude in the classroom, try to foster more critical thinking. But if you still have these tests, then you're just not going to succeed. So
this is a perfect example. So one thing that they're trying is they've installed middle school psychologists in Shanghai to help kids talk about academic pressure, how they're feeling, are you happy? And then I talked to one of these psychologists and she said, no one comes to see me because they're all too busy studying. You know, so it's just, it's a catch-22. This is a big problem.
In your book, I read something that I taught in South Korea for a little while, and it was something I'd heard there, which is you know, that the Korean and Chinese students might do really well on these tests, but they don't really have an innate passion for these subjects that they are made to do really well in. And that passion, that in the United States, that people might not have that passion and worse test scores, but if they do latch onto something, they really get into it, and that creates this greatness. And they would talk about things like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or folks like that, you know, two guys who dropped out of college. And it seems like that's sort of a sentiment that's in China as well. But I'm wondering, have you seen any research or studies that actually, you know, prove that out?
Well, it's funny. The Chinese seem very secure, even bold in a lot of areas. They're very proud of their military power. They're this growing economic power. They're a player with the U.S. But in education, they're so insecure. I actually met with the guy who helped design China's national math curriculum. The Chinese are very proud of their math scores. You know, on this huge test called PISA, they actually came in number one in the world several times on math, reading, and science. But at the end of our conversation, he sort of leans in and he says, you know, American math scores, yeah, they're not very good, but when kids enjoy a subject, they love it from the heart. And so they're looking at us to see how we stimulate kids' curiosities. How do we get them to love learning? They know we're really good at that, and they want to be more like us in that area. Another thing that we do well is we're really good at asking kids what they think. You know, they in the classroom, I spent a good amount of time observing classrooms in Boston, New York, Minnesota, Texas, and California. And, you know, the teacher's always saying, what did you think about what we just learned? And let's have a discussion. The average Chinese child is not getting that. They have a teacher knows best classroom. They go home and they have a parent knows best home environment. And so they don't get practiced at sort of thinking critically and making decisions on their own. It's a real problem.
Yeah, and we have a listener comment here, and Larry asks, how are teachers in China measured and rewarded? Perhaps they really do know better compared to their U.S. counterparts.
So here's another problem with trying to break away from the exam system. Schools are actually evaluated on how their kids do on tests. Mm-hmm. Not only that, teachers get performance bonuses based on how their kids test. So if you can imagine, I have these two characters in my book, Amanda and Darcy, and I follow them for 4 or 5 years. They're both high school students in Shanghai, and they both come up against teachers who take drastic measures to make sure their kids are scoring well. You know, one gave their students a math test in advance to give them a leg up against another school across the way. There's a lot of, there's a lot of trading of favors. There's a lot of pressure to cheat because of how intense the evaluation system is.
Well, let's go to some calls here. We have Han Lu in Sunnyvale. Han, welcome to Forum.
Hey, hi.
Hi, Han. Oh, I'm sorry. Is this Tricia? I'm sorry, wrong. Tricia in San Francisco.
Actually,
yes, you're on the air.
Actually, this is Han Lu from Sunnyvale.
So, oh, this is Han Lu. Sorry, okay.
Yeah, so I really want to thank the writers to share her perspective. Seems like usually people just only come from one background, like the American education or China education, and then she has background from two places. And then I'm really interested in reading her book. And then I also want to make a comment because, like, I grew up in China and then I got education from Shanghai. And my parents, actually, they never give money to the teacher.
Hey, Han, I'm going to put you on hold for a second because we got to get to a break. We are talking to Lenora Chu about her new book. And please, she's going to join us for the next part of the show, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Queenie Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny this week, and we are talking to Lenora Chu. She's an American journalist living in China, and she's got a book out called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, A Chinese School, and the Global Race to Achieve. It's about her experience of enrolling her son in a state-run public school, and the book also talks about the Chinese education system and compares it to the one in the U.S. And we had a caller on the line here, Han Lu, who was saying that she grew up in China, but her parents never gave money to teachers, and that was not the majority of Chinese. And she also had a question. So, Han, you want to ask your question?
I don't have a question. I just want to say, like, my parents never give money to the teacher. And I got a good education there, and then I really appreciate the Nona for writing the book to share her perspective.
Well, thank you so much for calling. Thanks. Let's go to the next call. That's Trisha in San Francisco.
Hi, yes.
Hey, you're on the air.
Great. I had a comment and question. I understood that China was going towards the Montessori system. And also, so that's the question, I guess. And then my comment in general is I have four young kids going through school now, and I see the education system change so much. So I see the education system change so much from testing all the time, especially at the younger ages. And I understand that they want to compete globally because they want to, they see the academics at those levels, not comparing globally. But my point is that as a big picture, Americans do so well as the creative entrepreneurs. And shouldn't we be looking at the big picture and what we end up and the end up result versus these, at each grade level test scores compared to globally?
Yeah. And actually, Lenora, that is a tension that you're constantly trying to figure out yourself. Whether you want, you see some value in this sort of drilling and giving your kid a foundational knowledge of certain things, but then you do worry about the creativity and whether you are stifling his critical thinking skills.
Well, so my son goes from a teacher knows best classroom, and he comes home and he has us. Me and my husband were American parents and journalists. And, our son has an equal seat at the dinner table. We're constantly asking him questions. We're debating. He makes his own choices. And so, I spend the last third of my book talking about the middle ground, because you have this very extreme system in China. They're trying to move towards the middle. And Americans right now, we're grappling with education reform. The policymakers are very much trying to lift performance standards. They think it's important, and they're sort of coming up against parent revolt. Teachers are not feeling supported. So, what is that middle? What are we looking for? Now, the Chinese think about Steve Jobs quite a lot, actually. And the funny thing is, in the West, we sort of idealize him as the creative genius. He's an individualistic, rugged, brash entrepreneur. He pushes the envelope. But what we forget, and the Chinese know, is that Steve Jobs actually was highly trained, right? He was attending electronics classes at Hewlett-Packard down the street when he was 13 because, the rigor of the local school system in the Bay Area was not enough for him. So you really need both. When we talk about creativity, we forget often that you also need that knowledge base. You need skills. You need training. And in my research, I really looked into this question because my son, from an early age, was coming home with math worksheets and drills and practice sheets. And I thought, oh, gosh, this is a lot. But the cognitive science actually shows there are certain things that still need memorizing. The more you commit to long-term memory, the better you learn. And actually, that knowledge is the foundation for creative problem solving. So, I see an emphasis on process-based learning, discovery learning in the West. And I just feel like we need to make sure we don't forget that knowledge is important, too.
And just quickly, Tricia was asking if China has a Montessori system.
So there are a couple of schools in Shanghai, which is where things happen first for the country. And it's difficult to teach a Chinese teacher how to use Montessori methods. And so for it truly to be Montessori, I think it's going to take a generation or two, because you need to move away from that sort of top-down teacher knows best model. And if you're a Chinese teacher who's come through the education system, he or she is going to have a tough time completely understanding the Montessori way. But, change is happening quickly, but that is the elite. Shanghai is the elite. There's still a vast number of school children out there, 200 million, who are not getting the Montessori method.
We have a listener comment on the web, and Jim asks, it sounds like your guest is taking her observations of one school in China and using that data point as a conclusion about all education practices in China. Isn't that on its face irresponsible?
So I have I've been working on this book for about 3 years. I'm a journalist. About a year in, I wanted to understand what was happening outside of Shanghai and Beijing, because China is not a monolith, and Shanghai and Beijing are well-resourced. And what I found, I met a rural family from Anhui province, and I've been following them for 5 years, and their young son is actually a main character in the book. And I follow them through the entrance exam process right up against high school, and it's devastating because there's a vast amount of inequality between rural and urban China. We mostly hear about urban China, but if you're a kid in Shanghai, you're 55 times more likely to get into a top university than the national average. And absolutely, you know, China's not a monolith, and I make sure that I address issues of rural inequality, Chinese education reform, and you'll definitely see that if you pick up the book.
Let's go to another call here. We've got Dharma from Santa Clara. Hey, Dharma. Welcome to Forum.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions to the guest there.
Yeah, Lenora.
One is, you touched upon the memorizing. So that is one important thing. In India, generally, the understanding is majority of the people will clear or score good marks by memorizing more than their understanding. That is one of the things. And second thing is, I wanted to understand about how the public school and private school differentiation in China?
Public and private, right.
Yeah, that's interesting, Lenora. What are there private schools in China? And how do they differ from the public schools?
You know, the funny thing is, when I talk about change, there are a lot of urban Chinese who are pulling their kids out of the public system and then putting them in the private system so they can get away from some of the more harsh aspects of education there. And it is proliferating. Now, I worry because, you know, there's one thing we should talk about. Teachers are the front lines for delivering political ideology in the classroom, you know, in society in general. And the Communist Party is actually cracking down on that. They're trying to shun Western ideology from the classroom. This year, they've rewritten textbooks to lengthen such things as the Second Sino-Japanese conflict. You know, they want Chinese to feel more hatred of the Japanese. So all of this is sort of going on, and urban Chinese understand this is not the way they want to be headed. And that's why you see so many people leaving the system. Private schools used to be an escape from that, but the party actually this year decided to clamp down even further. So, you know, what is happening out of Beijing with party ideology is, to me, quite disturbing. It used to be that if you look at private schools, that used to be where reform was happening. Mm-hmm. But now I'm not so sure.
And I get, the point you're making is that unlike schools maybe in the United States, the public schools in China are very much there to indoctrinate the students. It used to be about communism, but now it's taken a very nationalist bent. So that's a big part of that curriculum and part of the purpose of public education in China.
That's right, especially in the later years, in middle school and high school, kids are very much, if you want to advance, if you want to stay in, say, you want to go to the university system in China, or you want to be a government official, you do have to join the party. And that pressure starts to get very intense in middle and high school.
We're talking to Lenora Chu. She's an American journalist living in China, and she's got a book out called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, a Chinese School, and the Global Race to Achieve. Chu enrolled her kid in a state-run public school, and the book talks about his experience as well as the Chinese and American school system. And we want to hear from you. Do you think the rigorous discipline we're talking about in high-achieving Chinese classrooms could have some benefit for American schools? Or maybe Chinese schools have something to learn from us. Here's the number you can call. That's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Let's just get another call here, and we've got Rob from Fremont on the line. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Lenora. So I was wondering, looks like in the Chinese education system, the teachers, they keep a close eye on the students while they're in the school, and, you know, teachers are a role model for kids. Do you see that compared to American students, the Chinese students are less exposed to outside influence like drugs and sex? And how is the, you know, like the teen pregnancy rate in China, and how is the drug usage in kids in China? And is it dependent on their education system and the way it is keeping a close eye on the students?
You know, there is a problem with in rural China, a lot of, because China's, you know, embarked on this mass migration from rural areas into urban areas, one of the migrant workers I follow in my book, her name is Lauren, and she has not lived with her son for 16 years. She left him behind in the home village when he was a baby. And when he finally comes up against the national high school entrance exam, she has to rush home because she's afraid he's going to fail. He's been unsupervised for pretty much most of his life. And she comes home and she finds that he's addicted to video games. You know, he's given up on school, you know, years before. And it's really devastating for her. And I see a lot of neglect and increasing gang activity, especially in some of these rural areas, because there is very little supervision. In urban areas, the urban students that I follow in Shanghai who live with their parents, who are trying to work their way through the system, there is a lot of family support, and there's less room for that, for drug use and sex. They're very tightly watched if they're living with their parents in Shanghai.
That's really interesting about the rural experience, because in some ways it mirrors the immigrant experience that a lot of, I know, Asian Americans here had in the United States, where their parents are working all the time in this effort to provide for their kids, and then the kids are unsupervised and not doing that well.
It is devastating. It is probably the greatest barrier to social mobility is the, you know, how difficult it is to advance in rural education.
We have another listener comment, and this listener says, if the speaker honestly believes that American parents aren't academically competitive from day one and that donations play no role in schools' perception of a child, then I think she is looking at the U.S. education system through rose-colored spectacles. She might want to study in the Bay Area. It's not quite what you said, but why don't you flesh out that
comment? Is she saying that actually the Bay Area schools are also very, very competitive? Is that what she's saying?
I think so. I think that's sort of what I'm reading here.
Sure, that's yes. Absolutely right. And I was just talking to, I did an event a couple of nights ago with Gish Jen, who raised two children in Boston. And we were talking, you know, it is so competitive, especially in some of these larger cities, for school spots, and we're anxious about university admissions. And that's really not very much different from what the average parent in Shanghai or Beijing is facing. There's so much anxiety, you know, as far as corruption, perhaps. I don't want to call it corruption, but, you know, there is money in the U.S. system, too. You know, if I look at my alma mater, you know, you name a building, you know,
right.
It's just, you know, for admissions.
Or you pay for tutors, or you
right.
give other
They're
kinds
absolutely,
of support.
That's right. That's right. Socioeconomic, you know, your ability to help the educational experience here absolutely gives your child a leg up.
We've got another call here from Derek in Mountain View. Hey, Derek, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. First is the discipline point. Where do you see a correlation between the lack of discipline in the classroom and the lack of discipline in kids these days? For example, the BART was robbed a few months ago by 50 kids from Oakland. And then, like, 2 years back, there was cases of wilding out where they were just robbing people again at Bayfair and also other parts of the country. And two, second question is, why are we so afraid to look at the test scores and say, okay, we're not doing so well here. Maybe we can do better. I mean, we need a firm grasp on science and math and STEM subjects to even have respect for scientists and what they do. And is that possibly giving rise to, like, say, anti-vaxxers and also climate denial?
Wow, that's a loaded question. There's a lot to talk about there. I mean, I think generally in the U.S. there is a revolt against this sort of standards-based movement. And I think, again, that is partly because I really think we get it in sports, okay? And we get that training harder, getting faster, working harder to swim faster, whatever it is in sports that makes us get ahead. We understand the link to training. But if you try to transfer that to the classroom, it doesn't quite work because of that belief in talent and innate ability, especially when it comes to things like math and science. The studies have shown this. I quote a study that followed 5,000 kids over a number of years, and there is a distinct difference in the way Asians look at this issue versus, you know, the rest of America. So, and I think that's where the revolt comes from. We don't want our kids to feel badly if they can't keep up. And another thing, teachers are not supported in America. They feel very beleaguered. My mother-in-law is a career public school teacher. I have many friends and also teachers I've interviewed for this project where they feel they're being challenged on all fronts, from policymakers from above, parents are challenging them, and then their students are disrespecting them. We have a lot of problems over here.
Yeah, it's if you haven't lived in Asia, it's a little hard to understand how much differently teachers are treated there. Because when I was teaching, I literally felt like sort of like I was a doctor or a lawyer. It was that kind mm-hmm. of status that was bestowed to me when I was teaching
That's
in
right.
Korea. But can you talk about that a little bit? Because you have these are all questions that you have in your mind, too. You understand the value of drilling and sort of creating a foundation, and yet you know it can go too far. You had a chance to move your son to a international school and decided that you're going to keep him in this Chinese school, but there might be a time when you do have to move him. What is that calculation? When do you think that you might decide to give him a different educational experience?
So it's funny, as a parent in China, and I think we're doing this in America too, we are constantly evaluating what are the strengths of my child's schooling experience and what are the downsides and how do we adjust for where we're weak. And that's the conversation that's happening in American education, and it's a struggle, it's uncomfortable, but I feel that it's worth having. So we're constantly evaluating on a day-to-day basis, more like month-to-month. He's doing really well right now. He's doing really well in math because, again, the studies show that some things are better taught through a teacher-centered classroom in the early years, and I see that he's benefiting from that, the respect for education that he's developed. But, you know, in a couple of years, I'm sure that the homework will start getting very intense, and we'll have to decide. As a parent, you're always saying, you can't have it all, so what's important to you? And that's what we're doing.
So is that sort of when school starts to take over his life in a way that you think is unhealthy, that might be the trigger point? Or are there also concerns about developing critical thinking skills and a sort of individualism that might not have a place necessarily in the Chinese public school system?
So there is a point, this was much younger, he came home and he knew the lyrics to The East is Red, which is a party song. It's funny because my husband and I immediately, we sat him down, you know, where did you learn this? What do you think about what you learned? You know, we're talking to him constantly. I don't really worry about the critical thinking yeah. skills. What I do worry about is when classroom sizes, you know, when the teacher, when things start getting very intense for children as they approach that sort of middle school entrance exam, you know, but I don't want to be flip, but we have options. You know, we're Americans in China. I do worry about my characters, the people that I profile in my book who don't have the choices that we have. And I think that they're thinking about these issues too.
Let's go to a call now. We've got Gary in Concord. Gary, welcome to Forum.
Yeah, hi. I've been a pilot for over 40 years, flew for an airline, training and check airmen, have a lot of colleagues and have experienced it myself. A lot of students come over from Asian countries over here to learn to fly. I have friends that have gone to China and to Korea to teach. And the common thread seems to be that technically they're very good. They've memorized the information. The rote memorization is high. The practical application, the critical thinking, and the judgment just is not there. And frankly, the Asiana crash in San Francisco at SFO is a very poignant example of that inability to apply the memorized knowledge. That accident had – there was no reason other than just purely no judgment and no critical thinking about what was going on.
So we can't really comment on that Asiana flight, but that is that's a concern that I've heard amongst Asians as well, is that our kids are really good at memorizing, but they can't always apply those skills in a way that might be creative or common sense, I guess.
Sure. And, you know, like I said before, I had said that the Chinese are working on certain areas, and that is one of them. The word creativity and innovation actually appears in their latest national education reform plan. And they're taking notes from us on how we do it. One of the best teacher training institutions in Shanghai actually encourage all of their students to go over to the U.S., Australia, Europe to spend a year observing in the classroom and working with Western teachers. What worries me is that I wish that we would do the same. You know, obviously there's some funding issues. We can't send all of our teachers over to a foreign country. But there is this dialogue that China's participating in global education. And I think it would be wonderful if we, you know, did that as well.
So we've got just a quick second here before we have to go to break. But Jim asks, what role does Confucian culture play in how students perform?
You know, that's a loaded question. There are some scholars who have looked very deeply into this issue. Obviously, a child in the early years, if they're trained to sort of obey authority, then you can get them to do things that they wouldn't otherwise. You know, no 6-year-old really wants to learn multiplication tables. So there is a connection there. But again, you know, these things can be taken a little bit too far if you're not careful.
You're listening to Forum, and we are talking to Lenora Chu about her book, Little Soldiers, An American Boy, A Chinese School, and the Global Race to Achieve. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information on how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Queena Kim. So, Lenora, we've got a lot of calls here, so let's just try to work through them. We got Anne in San Francisco. Hey, Anne, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I, Lenora, I actually lived in Shanghai for 10 years and chose to put my two twin boys through the Chinese elementary school system through middle or fourth grade in Minhang District.
You have some stories.
I do, a similar experience as you. My question today is that I've moved back 2 years ago, and they just started middle school here in sixth grade. I've seen a lot of parents, Chinese parents from mainland China, who've gone through the system and they move themselves here after, you know, college and having kids here. And they carry the same attitude that in China, you know, if you have piano level, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, you get points. And if you do certain things, you get points. And they carry that same attitude here so that they make their kids, you know, play the piano, volunteer, play tennis, things like this to gain, quote-unquote, points to get into college. They're kind of like gaming the system, let's say, here. So my question
you know
is,
it's fun. Go ahead.
How do you see that influencing competition and the school system here?
Yeah, so what influence are those parents having on the U.S. school system? And I actually, we hear this a lot in the Bay Area in schools that are predominantly Asian, that some of the Anglo parents feel like it's just way too competitive and tense.
That's right. You know, I gave a lecture to about 80 teachers in San Francisco a couple of months ago, and one came up to me afterwards and said, how do I deal with this influx of Chinese parents? I try to talk to their kids about extracurriculars, and then the parents come and say, don't do that. We really want him to get into Stanford, and there's just no room for this on his schedule. And, you know, I think that they are bringing their values into the system. It's sort of a global melting pot. We're all sort of adjusting, right? And what I told that teacher is, I said, the Chinese parent in America actually needs to be educated too, because what my parents didn't know, they were in a similar boat when they were raising me and my sister, is that, you know, social network is important, working collaboratively with others. You know, the Chinese have a tendency to value achievement based on numbers, but there's so much more to success in America. And I just don't think they've gotten that message yet. And so it's going to take some time.
We've got Keith on the line. Keith, welcome to Forum.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And thanks for this interesting talk. I started wondering about U.S. education before about 1960, 1950. I think our education changed a lot. And in some ways, that little I know of it sounds a little more like Chinese education now, at least with regards to science and math. I think there was more rote learning, which I'm actually sorry to see go to some extent. Can you speak to that at all?
Well, yes. I mean, I do spend a section in my book talking about what we can learn from the Chinese way. I'm not talking about competitive state, you know, high stakes, authoritarianism. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, yes, cementing the basics. And the Chinese get that well. The problem is, if you stay in the system too long, then you start getting into an area where you're memorizing just to pass a test. But in the early years, where my son is right now, he's in third grade, those first few years of primary school, they're really getting that basic knowledge. And the studies show that you need that to move on to higher order thinking. And I think that we could learn from that. Absolutely.
Let's go to Terry in San Francisco. Hey, Terry, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's more of a comment and as opposed to a question, but it's kind of like since the education ethics, you know, the study ethics and habits in China are so different from ours here in Western civilization, it seems that it's kind of disrupting our public school system, not disrupting in a negative way, but although they go to public schools as well, you know, because in Asian communities, it's pretty much predominantly Asian students. You also have the low-income area, and it kind of makes for people to think, well, maybe they just need to study harder. But it's not that. It's more than that. It's leaving certain people, certain children behind even more. I don't know what can be done. It's not a negative thing. Maybe we need to take some of it with us. But it kind of makes those students who don't come from that type of atmosphere, the home, making studying being a priority, which it should be. But you have so many that we just don't do that in certain areas here in America, and we should, but because we don't, what happens to those students?
Yeah, I guess that's a complicated question, but I'm wondering, Lenora, if you have any thoughts to that. How do you bring that culture to America? It's really what she's asking.
It's hard. Yeah. So in China, there's a term called family education, and everyone is expected to participate. The teachers, in fact, demand it. The principals at school will say, we don't pick children, we pick parents, and parents are expected to be involved. And not only that, the average Chinese child in urban areas, at least, sometimes, you know, they have two parents and then they have their grandparents around because of the one-child policy. There's six adults looking after this one kid. That is a problem in America. I mean, there's so many issues, right? We need more support for families. Teachers need more support. In China, if a kid's not doing well, the teacher will actually spend time with them after school and they're compensated to do so. So there's some of these structural issues that we still haven't worked out in the U.S.
We've been talking to Lenora Chu. She's an American journalist living in China. She's got a new book out, and it's called Little Soldiers, An American Boy, a Chinese School, and the Global Race to Achieve. And before I let you go, Lenora, we should tell listeners that you're going to be here in the Bay Area in the next few weeks.
That's
I guess
right.
On October 1st, you're going to be at Book Passage.
Book Passage
in
Corte Madera.
Yep, at
4 p.m.
And then
I'll be speaking at Presidio Knowles the following evening.
On October 2nd. Lenora, thanks so much for coming on to Forum.
Thank you.
And I'm Queen of Kim, and you've been listening to Forum. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.